good evening, and welcome once again to Off Planet Radio Live. I'm Randy Moggins. And it is November the 28th, 2014. We are live on the Liberty Beacon, TownCrier.com, TLBTownCrier.com, the Liberty Beacon Network, where we are launching in slow progressions this network that's dedicated to bringing out information about the truth, about the reality of our times, and of course, all things that concern us both on planet and off planet. And it's winter. It is snow-covered here in the east. Cool, crisp air. Crystalline skies. You can look out tonight and actually see stars. It's an amazing phenomena. I don't know how they missed aerosoling the hell out of us today, but I think when the pressure systems are this high, I don't think they can do it. The abilities of man, the abilities of man are challenged by the forces of nature itself. And we're going to talk about the forces in nature. We're going to talk about law tonight. Anybody that's watched the debacle in Ferguson, Missouri, knows that street justice cuts on both sides of the thin blue line. The concepts behind the racial tensions that exist in this country and around the world are part of the inherent evil of our systems. Systems that long ago divorced themselves from natural law, from common law, and moved into statutory law with increasing degrees. The complexities of law now are so great that most people neither understand nor comprehend exactly what rules and laws they live under. Ferguson points out to us that neither side is right. You cannot take a street thug robbing a convenience store and make that right. You cannot make the fatal shooting of a black man by a white officer in the streets of Ferguson on the pretext of suspicion anything other than preemptive execution. The fact that the grand jury found the way they did was no surprise to anybody who watches politics and who watches law. Our justice system, as it's presently constructed, is not capable of delivering meaningful justice anymore. They are wrapped in their own meaningless system of legalisms and formalities designed to protect the elites who run the present world. My guest tonight addresses these matters from a common man standpoint. He spent 20 years studying law and most of that time applying it and helping out his fellow man in their day-to-day clashes with the system, whether it is the taking of property, the jailing of innocents over seemingly minor infractions, or the taking of children. Stephen John Miller has appeared on Coast to Coast with, I just forgot the host's name. Anyway, he'll tell you all about Coast to Coast. He has done numerous talk show interviews. He writes on blogs and has his own YouTube channel. He'll tell you all about that. Good evening and welcome to Off Planet Radio, Stephen John Miller.
Randy Morgan, how are you doing? All right?
I'm doing okay, except that I had a memory block and couldn't remember John B. Wells' name.
Yeah, it's sad. And he was the best, and he spoke too much. He told too much truth.
Well, it's not sad. John's launched his, I don't know if you know this, John's launched his own website, his own independent radio station.
Yeah.
CaravanToMidnight.com, which I am awesome. A subscriber of. And you spent 4 hours on Coast to Coast with John B. Wells going over a lot of what we're going to try to cover tonight in the modest 2 hours that we're given for this show. But give us a little bit of background about who you are, where you come from, and your expertise in applying the law?
Sure. I was raised as a Salvation Army officer's kid, as a Salvation Army soldier from a very early age until I graduated early from high school and went into the Army, United States Army. And so I was raised very young to be in service to people, and I realized that there was many people who were very unfortunate and born into terrible situations. And I spent a lot of my time in inner city of Chicago, inner city of Detroit, where I was born, and many other cities. And so I learned very young how horrible life can be. And I didn't live in this delusion that I'm sorry to say, that most Americans now live in, is this complete delusion. As long as Walmart is open, or the big box stores and restaurants, they feel like everything's okay, and they just keep voting, and every time they vote, more and more of their rights go away because they don't understand the process. That goes into the word trial. And you go to court. Trial means control process. That we can get into that a little bit more later. So being raised in the Salvation Army and the church, and I went to every music school there was in the Salvation Army, and I learned discipline, which kids, you know, obviously nowadays, for the most part, not all of them. I never say anything in generalities because there's a lot of good kids. But for the most part, kids are not getting the education they deserve or the discipline required for a successful, happy life. And that, and you know, you look at society, not just in the United States of America, in Europe and Great Britain and the United Kingdom, everywhere. And you've got to ask yourself why. And of course, that we'll get into maybe later on. We got a couple hours here to talk about the demiurge and the demigods and what's really going on within the doctrine of theology and how people are overlooking it, you know.
Well, you know, that's a subject that we touch on a lot on this show, because I think understanding the forces behind good and evil are very important. And you pointed out your own background. You know my background. You know what I've been doing for the last 12 or 13 years online and on radio, that religion doesn't really address it anymore then our present historical context allows us to understand our freedoms.
Exactly, yeah. And we are a race of people who have been walked upon and lied to and deceived at every conceivable level. And now we are in the time of Armageddon, or Armageddon, or the great revealing of the truth, or the great uncovering or unveiling. And so even people who don't want to admit that theology is based in basically astrology mixed with a twisted, perverted history, they're starting to learn that it makes sense when you look at the world. And I've listened to you, Randy, for a long time. I never dreamed about you actually, you know, having me on your show. You have a big following, and with George Ann, and is it Hughes? George Ann Hughes?
Yeah, the Bite Show.
Yeah, I love her very much, and I've listened to you on your own show and all your other websites too. And the amount of knowledge you put out there is it blows my mind, and it's very much appreciated. I listen to it at night. That's my form of meditation. I've never been good at meditating, to be honest with you. My mind works too fast. My meditation is at night, listening to off-planet radio. Sometimes I'll listen to old Art Bell reruns.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
That's
my form of meditation. I know it sounds crazy, but no. It puts me in this like Zen mode. And my dog is next to me, and it's peaceful, and I just shut off the world. You know, because these are my family. They think the way I think the way they think. Being born in the church, I was never accepted, because even as a little kid, I knew this was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, the sacrifices and Yahweh slaughtering everybody in his path And I always knew it was wrong. I got beat for it and subjected to really bad stuff. And then I was determined. By the time I was 12, I had read Zachariah Sitchin's The 12th Planet. That was 1976 in Chicago. And I was determined to find the truth. I wanted the bloody truth. Who's the human race? Where do we come from? And I think, I mean, to cut a long story short, but we do have time here, but I believe when you actually read the Bible and don't read it to the letter, but understand it in the format where it's talking about the demigods and the gods and the Elohim, which is Hebrew plural for gods, and then a few books later in the Bible, it says that the Father is not of human form. He is light. But it clearly states, like when Abraham and Sarah were having lunch and Yahweh shows up with two angels, that these guys were in human form. So they were obviously not the Father.
You know, I've come to believe over the years that the people that I've met in doing these shows, there was a core of us that were hardwired to not accept the BS that was being handed to us. And that I think we came in kind of knowing. And this may sound arrogant. I don't want it to be arrogant because I certainly, you know, there's an old saying, if I see further than other men, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. Well, I think we've stood on the shoulder of good giants, not the bad guys, but metaphorically of being able to see further, because there have to be people out there and voices out there that have both the ability to intellectually process the information, but even more importantly, the ability to have the heart towards their fellow man to use that knowledge in a right way.
And right.
One of the things that I have been impressed in talking with you over the last few weeks that we've been going back and forth on a number of issues is that you go a long way towards stepping out for your fellow man. I know that you're modest, and I know you don't, you do good deeds, and it says, those things which you do in secret, your Father in heaven will reward openly. And so I don't want to spill the beans, but talk a little bit about some of the things that you've been involved with in terms of the legal processes and some of the situations where you've been able to step in and help people. I know, for instance, that you helped, some Native American people who were in danger of losing their children. And this is a very deep and personal issue to you.
Yeah, very. Especially when you meet the children. And I'm a very emotional person. And some people would say, oh, that's a mental illness. You need Prozac. Well, I don't feel that way. I feel like I'm full of the spirit of the Father. And things keep me down. Like I'm still addicted to cigarettes, for example. Okay, I'm human. I don't eat as good
on.
As I should.
Come on, Stephen, a little Paxil there, it'll level you out.
Yeah. but I used to take all that stuff back in the day, and it took me years to get off of it because they convinced me that I was this, that, and the other diagnoses, and none of it was true. It was just I was putting my faith in the doctor instead of in the Father.
Well, I came to realize that my own so-called mental illnesses were actually the mark of uniqueness as a human being. So, you know, we share that as well.
Yeah. And you know, when I think about the things that I've fought through from a little innocent kid, okay, born just on the outskirts of Detroit, I remember being locked up in our house in riots and the city was on fire. My mom was crying. And shortly after that was quelled, I drove out in front of a car on my sister's bicycle and got hit. Everything was out to kill me, not including the vaccines that they pumped into my little physical body. Yeah. So I had to fight through these horrors of being mentally tortured and beat up by bullies, having an English-Canadian father that rules by the rod, literally takes you to the hardware store, and you pick out the dowel rod, and if you pick one out that's too small, I'll hit you more. If you pick one out that's too big, I won't hit you as many times, but I'll hit you just as hard. That's how I was raised, while the Bible was being read at the same time while I was being hit on the rear end, okay? I'm not judging him. And
No, I understand that. Look, we're twin sons of different mothers. I mean, we went to different schools together, dude. I mean, that's kind of my background as well. I wound up getting the crap beat out of me for the first 11 years of my life.
So, until I was 15, and I finally snapped, and I knocked my dad on the ground, and of course, he immediately called the police, and I ended up in a holding cell in Lincoln, Illinois, and they said, well, why'd you hit your dad? I said, well, he's been spanking me since I was a little boy, and I'm 15 now. I have my own car. And he goes, oh, well, he didn't tell us that. So they let me out immediately. Then they went and questioned him. Of course, this is 79, so there's no criminal thing. And then, he had a nervous breakdown shortly after because he realized he was no longer in control, unquote. Mm. And I packed my car and drove to Florida. And never looked back. I stayed there as a horse rancher until I was 38, served in the military there, got married there, had horse ranches all over the place. I was I don't like to use the word blessed because that word's been so overused, because I worked my butt off, okay, so if you want to call that blessed. But back to the point at hand, I'm not judging my father. He was raised by an old scrub woman right from London, England, came over here in 1899 on a schooner, okay, that's my grandmother, who passed away in 1989. And she was an old school Bible person, and you don't want to cross her because she'll love you one minute and she'll try to drown you in the tub the next minute. That was my grandmother that I had to deal with also until I was much older in life. So I don't judge my father. And this is what the point at hand is, it's very easy to judge the religious people that are totally indoctrinated into the crucifixion story, and that everything in the Bible is 100% accurate, which couldn't be more false. But you got to realize they're not going to change. In fact, I got in an argument with my father tonight, and he goes, "Oh, don't run down Christianity," and he'll sit there and run down different things about people, maybe their sexual preferences and that kind of thing, in a very mean, condescending way, and he doesn't see how wrong that is. I said, Dad, we live in a physical universe that is outside of the Father, okay? Jesus, or Isu, his real name, said, there is a vine planted outside the Father that shall be torn up by the root. That's us. That's planet Earth. That's this physical manifestation. The Father does not reside here because it's too dark. It's too dense, low vibration. So when you get these fake miracles answered, you should question if you're not being deceived. Mm-hmm. But that's what I think's going on, because if it was me and I had the power to heal this lady's elbow or a breast lump or whatever, I would rather bypass that and help all the children that are starving and being kidnapped, and all the children first and the animals. And then everybody else comes second. So the fact that's not happening proves to me this is a deception and a lie. And it's brought our world to the brink of destruction. And this goes into law. I'm getting there. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be preachy.
No. That's okay. I'm enjoying it. Continue.
Oh, okay. So this gets into the law, and these children at the Native American settlement, and Ironcloud, he has legal problems because his baby's down in Miami, and I've been helping him to try and get his baby up here to Missouri. And that's how they say it here in Missouri. And then there's 13 children there. Well, the police, what happened was a young couple that lives on the settlement, I'm not going to say any names, don't worry, they took their underweight baby. She always has underweight babies, okay? Probably from dental x-rays. That's usually what causes underweight babies or whatever, but I won't sit here and give a supposition. So she always has underweight babies. She took her little underweight baby to have it checked, okay? Now you'd think that's a safe thing to do, right? Because you care about your baby. And this agency comes in, oh, we don't want you going back to that Native American settlement. It's a church settlement. They're weird. And then they started saying all kinds of horrible things about the settlement. And they said, we're going to put you up in a house. And they basically kidnapped these people, this agency. They're not lawfully elected. They have no lawful authority to capture anybody's property, okay? Well, they were afraid, so they just followed the dictates of these people. And instead of ending up in a nice home, they ended up in the middle of Springfield, Missouri, in a hotel full of crackheads. And the little baby got hurt, the middle-aged son that's about 2 years old, and you know, ended up falling off the bed and hitting his face on the, you know, those cheap hotels are. So he said, that's enough. So he loaded the kids in the minivan and his wife and went back to the settlement, and I just happened to have been there. And I met them, and I said, tell me what's going on, and did you sign a safety agreement? Okay, and he said, yeah, actually I did. I said, well, then you're in good shape, because that means they don't think the baby is in, you know, and you know, that means they don't believe the baby is in any particular harm at this point.
Right.
I mean, you know, sure. I said, really, bring the safety agreement in here to the office, and I'll show you what to do. Then we need to go down to the sheriff's office, and we need to take everybody here down to the sheriff's office. I'm going to file some papers down there, and you need to file criminal charges against these people. But we won't push the criminal charges, you know, if they're going to leave you alone. So I went down right to the sheriff, and they didn't want to take the criminal charge. I said, pardon me? And then the clerk of the court called up there and said, you better listen to this guy. He's not just a normal person, because I'd already given her triplicate copies of the kind of paperwork I do, which is common law, not to be mistaken with English common law, which is very convoluted and should be avoided. It's almost as bad as maritime. So all of a sudden the deputy comes out, and the young man recognized him right away, and he says, yeah, you guys came on our property, and you had an M4, because this young man's a veteran. He goes, and you came on our property, and walking around demanding everybody's ID. And I said, is that true? And he goes, well, you know, we're doing an investigation. I said, oh, so nowadays, when you do an investigation, you don't need an incident report or a probable cause affidavit signed by the clerk of the court and the magistrate, accompanied with a warrant. You just go out with machine guns and terrorize little children and women and young people. He goes, well, I don't want to argue with you. I said, well, that's probably a good idea at this point, because it's a violation of Lieber Code, Section 1, Article 11, which is very serious, and I went through all the violations. Then he stepped out of the room we were talking in, because I think he thought we were going to jump up and arrest him, which I could have done. And I did have handcuffs hanging out of my back. You know, he could see them, and I was very tempted. because these are serious criminal codes they violated with impunity and with, you know, malicious intent. I said, you can't do this anymore. And he goes, okay, I understand. I said, you better understand, because if you touch these people's children again or come on their property without due process of law, I'll be back here. Okay, and I will go down and sign a warrant with the U.S. Marshals, and you all are done. Okay, this isn't going to happen again. I said, we aren't your adversaries. We aren't an occult or cult. We aren't a militia. We're just peaceful people living on the land, minding our own business. There's a farm. I'm just a Mennonite guy they hired to come up there and teach them how to farm and help them out. And I get up there, and it turns out you guys are terrorizing these people. Based on what? An agency saying the baby's underweight and making all kinds of false accusations on these people? You realize how serious of a criminal charge that is? He goes, yeah, I understand. It won't happen again. I handed him a copy that I gave triplicate to the clerk of the court. I said, you better read this. You have 21 days from today to see the jury in order to determine, okay, who has lawful right to tender or administrate these people's property. And if you have a verified claim or what's a valid cause of action that we've damaged or harmed somebody, we'll come down here and settle it, because we're men and women and we believe in the law. But you don't have that. You don't even have a complaint. I said, I know what a complaint is, officer. I said, I was married for 21 years. And he started laughing. He goes, okay. He goes, I understand. I said, you're a nice guy. I'm looking in your eyeballs right now, and I think you're a nice officer. You're what, 25 or so? I said, don't do the wrong thing, dude. You're supposed to protect us from domestic enemies. And I'm 51 years old, and my whole life it's been domestic enemies. It hasn't been Al-Qaeda trying to take my .22 rifle away. It hasn't been, some foreign agents from another country trying to take my rights away to speech and reading my emails and listening to my phone calls. It's been domestic enemies in Washington, D.C. that are violating the Lieber Code. And he goes, okay, I got out my shook his hand. I said, God bless you. We don't want any more trouble. I don't want any SWAT teams or any cops on that property ever again, dude, for any reason. Now, that was 28 days ago. They haven't had a single problem. So that's what we all need to do for each other, though. And, yes, it's scary and you know, have to do that because you're waiting to, there's no rule of law anymore, Randy. It's anarchy.
You just brought up something, and this is actually a good place to start down the road here.
Okay.
And I want to touch on the Lieber Code, but there have been numerous conversations, and anybody that's been in what's called the American Patriot Movement, the Constitutionalist Movement, the Redemption Movement, oh God, you know, you just get down the whole list of them. There's bunches of people out there. And I know, right, a lot of these people. I was on Patriot radio stations, and I like a lot of these people, as wrongheaded as I think they are. And a bunch of them have gotten themselves locked up eating their own poison. So it comes down to, where did things start to go wrong in this country? And most people will go, well, it was 1947 with the National Security Act. That was 1933, the bankruptcy of the United States. It was 1913, the Federal Reserve, 1914, No, it goes back a whole hell of a lot longer than that.
Yeah, try 1860, thereabouts. It became very fascist. And by 1863, it was in writing, the law of war by James Lieber and Lincoln, was identified as the guy, you know, heading up the D.C. gang under this law of war. And we were now the belligerents, and Washington, D.C. was the enemy, the occupying force. But they agreed to, you know, uphold and defend the only social contract we have with these guys, is the United States Organic Constitution, okay, which, you know, we can go into the whole Virginia scheme and the Virginia Company, and you know, if you really understand, listen to professors of law, George Washington redacted or took his 2.5 miles out of Washington, D.C. So Washington, D.C. doesn't even exist as a legal entity.
Right, right.
He took his property.
You just brought something up. We might as well just go back to the roots of this thing. About 5 years ago, I went to Virginia and I went to Jamestown. And I went to the museum that was there and looked at the documents and read the documents. The, what do they call it? The grant, I guess, that was given to the settlers who came on shore in Virginia. It's very clear from the language of that document. This was simply an adventure in commerce right from the very start. There is no even hiding it that the colony of Virginia, as were all the other colonies, I live here in Pennsylvania, one of the 13 original colonies. Again, William Penn was given this land in a grant, and it was specifically for commerce, although in the case of William Penn, this was also a religious refuge as well for Quakers. But
exactly.
we have a mixed background. I mean, on the one hand, we have this legacy of people who came here to escape the oppression, and then they came here and they carved something out that was rather unique, and we wind up with worse oppression now. I mean, this country's worse than England would have ever hoped to be at the height of the East India Company. I mean, the adventures we're doing are global. We are the New World Order. This is the apocalypse right now, and we are the kingdom of the Antichrist, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Oh, without any shadow of a doubt. And because money, I mean, if you want to use allegories, I consider...
I use anything that works, anything that communicates.
Yeah, exactly. Our system of money is Satan. S-A-T-A-N, okay? It is the great Satan that divides all. And if you have a whole bunch of money, you go to the top of the ladder. Everybody else gets stepped on, okay? I think our money system is Satan. I don't believe in a literal figure of Satan because I've studied too much on Egypt and, you know, where all this stuff came from all the way back to the, you know, people want to get into Plato, you'll start understanding where the spirituality came from in the Bible and the ideas of hell and the underworld and all that. But anyway, yeah, you're exactly correct, Randy. That's why I listen to you. I learn a lot and I take notes because certain shows you do are stuff I've never heard before. So I like to learn from you, and George Ann is wonderful. And I listened to Peter Lavenda the other night. And
Peter just returned. Peter Lavenda was missing for a while. He just appeared again, thank God.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe, you know, a lot of people that are truly spiritual in nature, this is too much for them. And a lot of good people are going to start disappearing, either passing away or just throwing all their digital junk in the garbage and disappearing on foot. You know, I mean, I thought about it too.
I think about it about 5 times a week anymore, because and nothing works anymore. I mean, simple. You and I tried to do a show a couple weeks ago. The phones wouldn't work. You know, I get guests on the show, and in the middle of a very interesting topic, the phone lines decay. Why? Because Microsoft owns Skype, and Microsoft is part of the kingdom of Antichrist, of course.
Yeah. But they're standing in for Christ.
Yeah, exactly.
They're becoming Christ. They are Christ.
The prince of the power of the air. That's what they are.
Right.
So drawing you back a little bit, specifically to the Libra Code, tell me what you know about the Libra Code, because honestly, this is stuff that I've only learned in the last few years. I've gone back, looked at the Libra Code, the 14th Amendment, and Reconstruction, and the D.C. Organic Act as a way to kind of somehow orient where the corruption came in.
Yeah. Well, what's weird is, Randy, it's like as soon as they, you know, put one act together, and I don't think anybody ever reads it in Congress is the problem. Big problem. In other words, these people are all complicit in this stuff. And the NDAA, yes, the NDAA proves this because there was an overwhelming vote to completely destroy what's left of our Constitution. The Libra Code, I'm looking for let me pull it up real quick. I'm sorry. I had it right
That's
here.
That's okay.
You'll never remember. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I pulled it up too because I had to look at it again. The mind starts
It's very important.
Yeah, it is.
Because this is a big remedy in law. Okay. Here it is. I've got so much stuff on here, it's mind-bending. Libra Code of 1863. My favorite is Section 1, Article 11, which I'm going to read right now over the airwaves as a remedy. So you would put this, the number one thing people do wrong in court is they talk. Okay? They talk. I'm not going to mention any famous people in jail right now, or one that just got out of jail, because I respect them too much, and I really do care about these people, so I don't want to bring their names into it, but you know who I'm talking about. They think they can go to court and be smart enough to talk and open their mouth, okay? They obviously haven't studied what Ori Tennis is, which is O-R-E-T-E-N-U-S, okay? These are statements that they're going to use against you, okay? And as soon as you start talking to the magistrate, remember, there's no such thing as a judge. This is the lie we've all been fed, okay? Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a judge. The judge would be the assize jury, spelled A-S-S-I-S-E, the assize jury. This is the constitutional jury that's drawn up by the sheriff, and 12 men are seated. It actually says 12 white men, if you get back the ancient... which is, you know...
Actually, it goes back, it's 12 white men who were landowners, technically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Don't, you feminists out, please don't go there.
No, I'm not racist or...
No.
I'm not a misogynist either. I love all people, all colors. what happened in Ferguson, Missouri was despicable.
Yes,
yeah, he was a thug. He robbed that little store, and he was a big guy. But that doesn't negate the fact he was, not given due process of law. He was just executed on the street. That cop should be sitting in prison.
Yeah, sure.
He should have called backup in. I mean, I'm not going to go into all that. I'll get back to the Libra Code. That really irritates me. And I don't blame the people for being upset. Anyway, so the Libra Code, now I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. The remedy in court, don't talk in court, okay? This is so important, and people aren't getting it. From what's his name, I won't say his name up there in Canada, to the guy down here in America, United States, that, almost got in serious trouble, because they're all talking, okay? And they don't know the rules of engagement, okay, which is very important. So when you're in court, if the judge says, Randy Moggins, okay, yeah, go ahead and stand up. See, I hear all these lies. Oh, don't stand up. You'll give him jurisdiction. That's not how the court works. As soon as he reads, all the complaints and everybody's sworn in, he's got jurisdiction, or her, okay? How you're separating yourself from the rest of the laws of the land there behind the bar is when he calls your name, Randall Moggins, and you stand up. He'll say, are you Randall Moggins? Say, if you don't mind, I'd like to give this piece of paper to the bailiff and one for the prosecution. You don't want to ambush the prosecution. This is very important. So you give one for the prosecution, one for the judge. It says, I never authorized this name to be used in commerce with the state of Pennsylvania, Missouri, Michigan. Okay. Compare to C as in Charles, F as in Frank, colon. That's Latin for compare to. You're just comparing your belief to Hale v. Henkel, which describes a person as a corporation and not an individual, okay? Now you just separated yourself from the corporate entities you're all sitting around, the dead people. You separated yourself from them as an individual, okay? Very important, and you haven't said a word, so they can't ori tennis on you and use your statements against you in a future trial. You hand that to the bailiff, he hands one to the prosecutor, hands one to the judge, they read it, and the judge is going to say, okay, where are you going with this? Say, I'll conditionally accept. Now, this is a good thing I've heard on YouTube, they're accurate on. Conditional acceptance is called.
Yeah.
I conditionally accept. Don't ever call him your honor or judge. That's very important. Sir is acceptable. Never call him your honor or judge, or you just put him in control of your future. Now he can hear your case because you identified him as the judge. The judge is not him. It's the jury you want. This is very important stuff, and when this is syndicated, I hope people rewind it and write it down. It's sir, okay? I conditionally accept your offer to approach the podium, sir, as long as all my natural rights that are protected by the United States Organic Constitution, the Bill of Rights, are observed at all times. And a lot of times a judge will say, not the judge, see, but this is how people see these guys. They're not judges. They're magistrates, okay? And call them sir. But a lot of times these attorneys in black robes, they'll say, okay, yeah. They won't say a clear yes. And you say, is that a yes or a no? Yes, you may approach the podium. Say, do you mind if I approach the podium? Don't listen to his commands, okay? He's trying to become judge over you and deceive you, and he's working for the Brotherhood of Saturn, which is Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Satan deceives all people.
Yes.
Yeah, this is how this works, and they know this is how it works, okay? So now you're up at the podium. Now you've already got your papers prepared. You don't want to waste time in the court and dishonor the court and all that happy stuff, okay? So now you're at the podium. Now the next paper goes to him, okay? And this is very important. It's very powerful. you see, ori tennis refers to verbal or oral statements and the practice of a presumption of correctness. So when you talk, it's a presumption, and presumptions are highly illegal under biblical law, under these statutes of of the Jewish people. So you don't want to make presumptions. Ori Tennis is presumption of correctness. And the appeals court, under presumptions of correctness, gives to the findings of fact reached by a trial based on what you say. Okay? So all that's very important, not to talk. Don't ever talk.
That's why they have a court reporter. That's a stenograph.
Exactly. Because they're going to look over everything you said, and they're going to tear you to pieces when you're done. And that's what they did to a lot of people as of recently in the law movement. And it's so sad. Because they think they know all these codes. They think they know something. They don't know squat. The judges are laughing their rear ends off at these people. You know, I mean, they can throw these guys away for 10, 20 years. Because they're allowing an attorney to stand in judgment over them. And the black robe of the Brotherhood of Saturn, okay, as an ecclesiastical Roman priest, because the Pope can't be there, he's busy that day doing whatever, okay, he's standing in for the Pope. And he's offering you forgiveness by way of benefit or a privilege. Yeah, it's a benefit if you just pay a fine. It's a privilege if he puts you in salvage, which is maritime terminology for jail, okay? So now when you hand him your next piece of paper, see, if people understood what civil rights were, they would never want civil rights.
That's exactly right, yes. That goes back to the 14th Amendment, which did not free the slaves but enslaved the free men.
Right, yep. So now your next piece of paper you hand from the podium to the bailiff, and you haven't said squat to the judge. You've conditionally accepted to go to the podium. Okay, the first piece of paper said, "I never authorized this name," in all capital letters. "I'm not in commerce with the state." Okay, compared to Charlie Frank, CF colon. That's compared to in Latin, compared to Hale v. Henkel, okay, there is your case law, but you didn't actually use it, okay? You just compared your belief to the Supreme Court case law of what a person is, and you're saying, "I'm not a bloody person," okay? So, so always use that, okay? And beliefs cannot be ruled on, they're ruled against. So you got them by the you-know-what, okay? It cannot rule on your beliefs or rule against your beliefs. Beliefs are a personal... What? They're a personal right. What are personal rights? They're property. The government cannot do anything but secure and protect property. Okay? And when the owner shows up of the property and says, "Hi, thank you for securing and protecting my property. I'm here to have it restored now, your rights," they have to do it. But everybody does everything wrong in court. They go, "Oh, the court's corrupt. I lost." It's like, no, you don't know the law. The court's just fine. Trust me, I've never had a problem with a judge, not once, or a cop, not once ever in my life, okay, except for my divorce, which is a whole other thing, okay? So, you don't want to be mean to these people. You want to be smiley and friendly, because even crazy sociopaths and psychopaths and people who don't believe in the 13th Amendment, of title and nobility, they like nice people, and it's harder to want to hurt you, okay? So the next piece of paper, you're requiring main prize bail, okay? In admiralty law, if you're at sea and you exaction somebody's property, say, "Give me your vessel," that's called booty, okay? B-O-O-T-Y, just like, booty call. Okay, if you're on the land... In an admiralty court, which is called a prize court, it's called prize, okay? So when you're in a prize court, they want your money or your vessel, your body, okay? They're going to get one or the other, okay? So, as always, require main prize bail as the only lawful bail under the Fifth Amendment that presumes you innocent until proven guilty, okay? The arraignment process they currently use, it's completely illegal. It was solely created to allow magistrates to be in the courtroom and rule on criminal cases, which is actually not permissible unless you open your mouth and agree to it, like I said earlier. Said, "Yeah, go ahead, judge. As soon as you call him judge, you're doomed, okay? You better hope he's a nice person." So you require your main prize bail and also an assized jury trial. This would be on the second piece of paper. It's when the sheriff seats a jury of 12 men slash women, you know, if you don't want to be misogynist, of your peers, and the magistrate cannot be present. That's the law. Or it's an act of barratry, or jury tampering or obstruction of justice, Title 18, U.S. Code 101 through 1005. Okay, now you can put all what I just said on the next piece of paper, and chances are that's the last piece of paper you'll have to hand the judge. I don't care what the charge is, because they hate juries, because juries hate attorneys and hate judges. Okay, I we can get into a lot more. Trust me, I've got something lined up here.
Define, real quickly, just loosely define barratry so that we understand that term.
It's jury tampering.
Okay.
Yeah, it's illegal for the judge to give the jury instructions, but you see it all the time on TV, you know, O.J. Simpson's trial. You know what got O.J. Simpson off? Okay, and this goes back to, this goes back to Trinity v. Pagliaro, okay? Where there must be a competent witness to take the stand, or there's no subject matter jurisdiction. Well, for a year and a half, the jury sat there waiting for Patricia, whatever her name was, to put somebody on the stand. They had firsthand knowledge of O.J. doing this, you know, heinous act, which we all kind of figured he either did it or was complicit. But that's not the point. The point is we have a system of law. She could never put anybody on the stand. And Johnny Cochran said, okay, I'm going to be disbarred, but I want my $13 million, and I don't care. I'll just go to the Bahamas. So he waited. This is the sentence that got O.J. off on the DNA. And he asked the guy that does the DNA sampling. He goes, is DNA always accurate? That was it. That got O.J. off. And he waited a year and a half to pull that out of his hat. And all he could do was answer no. And that's a reasonable doubt. There's nobody on the stand, a competent witness to say O.J. did it. That was the end of the case. But O.J. was so damn dumb. I'm sorry to say that. And Johnny Cochran didn't care about his own brother, right? Or else he hated him. Johnny Cochran could have said, oh, O.J., since you won, you do realize all you need to do is go to the clerk of the court and they'll refund all your money. And you didn't even know that. That's how stupid we are in this country, okay? So if you're found not guilty, I can't remember what his bond was to get out of jail on that. It was millions.
It was like $10 million, I think.
Yeah.
It was a ridiculous amount of money. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if I have to give the judge a third piece of paper, which means one for the prosecution, one for the what we call the judge, I call him sir, it would say, you know, I believe it is the law to have an impartial jury hear any criminal case compared to, that's C, Charlie, you know, and Frank, CF, colon, Article 3, Section 2, Clause 3. I believe that any magistrate took an oath to uphold the organic Constitution of the United States of America under Article 6, Clause 3, who also adjudicates codes and statutes under, compared to, the organic D.C. Act of 1871, quasi-constitution, are therefore unlawful and void judgments. That's the third final piece of paper. Now, they're either going to pull me up a jury, or they're going to send me a letter in the mail in 2 weeks saying lack of evidence, case dismissed, which is 99% of the time what happens. Or they'll drag it out for 6 months and then, you know, then just throw the whole thing out. So I know I did that kind of fast because I'm...
No, that was actually good. I wanted it to be concise because the idea here is, and we'll put some notes up with this with show. We always put a show page up, and we always try to give a little bit of documentation. But the idea of what you're going through on the show tonight is to get people to go look for this information themselves. You see, you don't have to be a law expert, but you do have to study, and you do have to go read this material and understand it for yourself, because you can't. You can't walk through this like a parrot. You have to have a little bit of working in the gray matter in order to make this work. This is just primary. You know this. I mean, you're not going into court and brandishing legalese and trying to use their copyrighted laws. You are simply using common language, common applications of laws and the principles of what they have written inside their own documents.
Right. And just like if you get a ticket, okay, and this is a very important thing. It's on the same subject matter. They're like, you know, we all get tickets. Well, I haven't had one since 2010, knock on wood. And I had it thrown out, obviously. But if you get a ticket, you send a certified letter to the police officer who violated all your rights, okay? But you don't want to get in an argument and a legal battle with him on the side of the highway, because that's just dumb, okay? I mean,
yeah, that'll get you tasered these days.
Yeah, it'll get you shot or whatever. I mean, you know, I kind of feel them out. I'm good with people. You know, I'll mention certain codes and laws, and you just violated the Missouri Revised Statute Emergency Motor Vehicle Code 402.011, turning on your overhead lights and, you know, displaying an emergency where there isn't a bona fide emergency. That's a misdemeanor because you're getting a paycheck. It's a felony. I might go that far. Then they go, are you a lawyer? But I said, yeah, according to Black's Law, you know. Oh, okay. But anyway, I said, just give me my ticket, dude. You're doing your job, and I appreciate you guys. I love you guys. Okay, I'll be right back. 90% of the time, they don't give me a ticket just on that one sentence I just threw off, okay? So memorizing stuff and being fluent, very, and smile and be friendly. Keep your hands where you can see, be seen. Turn all the lights on in the car. You know, just be as legal as possible. I don't, you know, these people driving around no tag, to me, you know, they're just not getting the name of the tune. But so you send the cop that violated all your rights a certified letter to his, you know, living soul, okay, John Doe, okay, not officer, okay, none of these guys are officers, you know, but they're not officers, you know that, Randy, and I'm preaching to the choir here, but the audience doesn't know this, that they're not officers. Officers are either elected, appointed, or commissioned, okay, and but I don't even go that far with them. I don't want to hurt their feelings. They feel so important in their little uniform, and it's kind of like talking to a big, dumb Boy Scout, so you mail them a certified letter of fair warning, okay? No, it'll say notice, and then colon, letter of fair warning, colon, okay? Then state your beliefs as why your natural rights were violated. Okay, again, your beliefs cannot be ruled on or ruled against. This is how you win, okay? The cop will have his DA buddy, the prosecutor, read this letter. And the DA will say, you know what, dude, you better stay home from court that day or just go out and write another 50 tickets. Don't bother with this guy. Okay. Now take that letter of fair warning as a notice and triplicate to the courthouse, one copy for the judge, one for the defense, one for the DA or prosecutor. Okay. So you're not ambushing the prosecution. Again, use your beliefs as to why your rights were violated and use their own criminal codes and Lieber war crime codes against these guys. Okay, but use the Latin, of course, you know, compare to, which is CF colon, okay? Charlie Frank colon, okay? Before any code or statute, such as Title 18, you know, just so you're not using their copyrighted codes that are copyrighted through a company in Canada right back to the Crown, okay? And so, you know, also throw in False Claims Act, known as the Lincoln Law, under 31 U.S.C. Section 3729 through 3733. Okay, so False Claims Act's a scary one. That's got like a minimum fine of $1 million. So you can throw these in there, and guess what? There, you know, when you show up in court, the cop's not going to be there, and the judge is going to throw it out every single time, okay, without condition. And I listened to, I can't think of that one guy's name. I'll mention his name, Mark Stevens. He's got a lot of good information. But that he spends too much time trying to talk to these psychopaths.
Yeah, he does.
That's just stupid. You're not going to change the system like that. You got to change it by learning their system. And now as far as the children go, this is something people have to understand. This is very important. And, you know, to never address the magistrate ever, okay? When you do, you just appointed the judge of your case, and now you're at the mercy of that attorney in the black robe of Satan, and that's what it is. Never talk to the magistrate ever. Only use paper and pen and require a leave of court if you need time to write, you know, something that you're wishing to have done or that you want to do. And require leave of court means you're demanding to step outside of the courtroom for whatever reason. I had a friend keep off a big case, I won't say what kind it was, for almost 2 years, just based on leave of court for headaches. And they finally threw it out. He said, I'm requiring leave of court. Judge, and he goes, for what? He goes, I have a massive cluster headache. Well, how long do you need? He goes, I don't know. I got to see my doctor in a few weeks. And he kept doing that, and they threw it out. So, I mean, there's you know, it's really important to know how these guys work. So the court rules only apply to you when you start talking and appoint the magistrate judge over you, okay? I jotted a lot of stuff down, so I didn't, you know, I didn't stall. The corporations, okay, America is a corporation. Anybody can look up the case law on that. A corporation is a colony of the Queen of England, okay, Queen Windsor, Elizabeth Windsor. And the people working for those corporations, including even Walmart, okay, et cetera, these big box stores, are subjects. These are subjects of the Queen of England, and they don't know it.
Can you can we bookmark right at this point? We got a hard break coming up at the top of the hour, and our, just bookmark it there, Queen of England, so that we remember where we're at.
And yeah, okay.
We're going to take a break, and I have a musical performance I want to play during the break tonight.
Cool.
And
cool.
We'll do all that and come back for another hour with my guest, Stephen John Miller, here on Off Planet Radio. We'll be right back.
Off Planet Radio.
Back to hour number two of Off Planet Radio Live. The musical performance that you just heard, I guess, is our way of extending the greetings of the season in the best possible spirit, which is remembering what this all was and where it began such a long time ago. Thanksgiving, well, today was Black Friday. The reconciling of the books by the Sanhedrin on the commercial side of the global economic system. How interesting it is that we celebrate Black Friday. And that performance is from our guest tonight. Stephen John Miller is with us. We're talking about the law, but he's a multifaceted, multi-talented individual. And that performance of O Holy Night is, well, that's just another facet of the personality of Stephen John Miller. Welcome back to the second hour.
Thanks, Randy. Yeah, that performance, I kind of screwed it up in the ending there, the timing, because I always sing louder than the music, and then my timing gets off, and, you know, I make a lot of mistakes, so.
Never give away your secrets. The flaws of any performance okay. are their authenticity and the beauty of it.
Thanks.
I have been a music fan since I was a tiny little child, and I've seen major performers, and I've seen them at their best and at their worst, and I've seen major performers blow it. And they just simply move over and step right over it because that's what you do. The show must go on. That's an amazing performance. And when I heard it, I went, wow, this is the guy I've been talking to. This is the guy that was doing heavy metal at one point. There's a lot of your personality that I don't think people know a lot about.
No, I don't make it real public. I mean, John B. Wells tried to make it public. I got like 500,000 hits to my website when he mentioned, you know, I never called myself maestro or anything grandiose or anything that's a violation of the 13th Amendment. I've worked with orchestras and some pretty big people that are more into the commercial scene than I am. I don't like stages, and I don't like a whole room full of stinky people, so I never worked out for me on a really huge scale until the internet came along, and then suddenly I had, like, I don't know, you remember that website Tag World?
Vaguely, yeah.
It was out for a little while. I got 22 million hits on that website, so they had something figured out. That, let's say, Facebook and other websites I'm on, they don't promote you or whatever, so that's pretty cool.
Well, you know, unfortunately, music has gone away from the artist and gone into the cult of personality, and now we're at the place where there is no artistry, where basically, and I'm sorry to say this, but the modern versions of pop culture, which is hip-hop and urban rhythm and blues music, has stripped away everything that was beautiful about music. I grew up in the era of Motown, Stax, rhythm and blues music. I lived near Philadelphia, and I got to see some of the greatest acts that toured. They literally toured this the whole East Coast, and I would see bands like the Delphonics and the OJs and the Spinners. Yeah. All these wonderful bands that came out of Philadelphia, because they just they did what was at one time called the Chitlin Circuit. And nobody, Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, nobody knows that. Patti LaBelle, Lady Marmalade, I saw them. I saw Patti LaBelle perform live in a room that was just a small ballroom. And what has happened now is, well, the music industry stripped. It's dead. Internet broke the video star. And the music industry is now, you know, scrabbling for anything they can get to make a buck, which unfortunately is crap. And we have a generation.
It's electronic garbage is all it is.
Yeah, we have a generation of people that don't understand harmony and melody and tempo. They're now being blasted. They have their ears blasted with bass lines and rat-a-tat drums and electronic buzzes and farts that basically have nothing to do with music.
No, no. And, you know, that goes back to a race of manipulated, deceived beings called humans. And you can get really theologically deep, because I don't believe in Judgment Day at all. I really don't.
Well, I do. I believe we judge ourselves ultimately. I think there's a place in consciousness, and this is what the judgment seat of God is.
You
judge you.
That's
the allegory, the metaphor behind the white throne judgment of God, is that our consciousness ourselves ultimately judges us. And if we don't learn mercy in this world and serving our fellow man, we heap that upon ourselves as our condemnation, and then we can move on into eternity. There it is. That's the nutshell theology.
Oh, that was very well, very well put.
So,
what I said, I don't believe in the judgment. I don't believe in this big bearded guy throwing saying, Steve Miller, you smoked too much weed in the 80s and you snorted too much cocaine or whatever. I don't believe in that part. I do believe I'm trying to clear my own conscience of some dumb things I've done in my life and still have issues with before I pass. So I don't have to deal with it. I don't want to come back here.
That's exactly what I've said many times. I'm done with this. This is it, the final cycle, baby.
Yeah.
I know it's a big universe out there, and I see human progression, not evolution the way it's been understood, as a spiral. And so the idea is to bring the concentric circles tighter and tighter into the pinpoint where you, dissolve into one. So there it is. There's the dime store theologian for tonight. I want to take you back to where we were when we took the break, because you were kind of going into a very interesting place, which had to do with all of these powers and principalities that basically govern over us, you know, the Vatican, the Queen of England. Can you kind of pick up that thread a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, how the Vatican got involved, as far as having power over Great Britain or the United Kingdom, if you will, is don't quote me on the king because it just slipped out of my head, but I believe it was King Henry VIII. He sold Great Britain and all her wealth to the Vatican to save his soul from hell. Okay.
That was after he had beheaded five of his wives.
Yeah, same, yeah, and he was a little guilty about that.
Yeah, the six wives of Henry VIII, yeah.
Yeah. So that's how the Vatican took power over Great Britain, is it was sold to save the soul of the king. And the kings and queens, they don't have, they are sterile. They can't have children like we can. So all of them are born of artificial, what do you call it, Randy?
Artificial insemination.
Yep, that's how they're all born. Queen Elizabeth Windsor was artificially inseminated from her mother's cook, and some other guy. Remember, this is technology they had that we didn't have back then as the peasants or whatever. We couldn't do that. But they somehow they knew how to do it, because if you really study the hierarchy of Great Britain, most all of them are born of artificial insemination.
You would just hope they would get better stock. I mean, honestly, yeah. You know, the Windsors, I mean, they've got to bring somebody like a Princess Diana in from time to time to freshen up the bloodlines because...
You hit it right on the head, yeah. And once they were done with her, what did they do with her, you know? They took her butt out because she was complaining about the sex parties and all the evil stuff they do. She didn't like it. So they took her butt out, and... I feel very sorry for her, humble girl. Wasn't she from like Kansas or something? Or
Princess Diana? Oh no, no, she was also one of the lines over in England. You know, I mean, they've got dukes and archdukes, and I mean, they do intermarry. Like I said, they introduce new stock into the bloodlines because, you know, their faces are almost falling off sometimes. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah.
The genetic.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, now here's how, theologically speaking, or philosophically, kind of a mix here, okay, because this gets into good and evil, because that's the words we're all born to, you know, to have in our head. Like, oh, that's an evil neighbor, that's a good neighbor. Well, here's how I see it, okay, and, you know, and the only reason I even voice my opinion is so I might learn and be corrected one way or the other, okay? Because I'm not an arrogant guy. You don't learn to do stuff unless you, you know, voice your opinion and then have somebody say, well...
I do it all the time.
Yeah. But, okay, is a nest of yellow jackets or a nest of hornets, is that evil? Or are they just are what they are? And that's how I see the people that rule the world that don't have a soul, obviously, no empathy or compassion at all. I mean, Great Britain is solely behind the deaths of billions of people, controlling all of Africa's farming, controlling everything. The Queen bequeaths, you know, a third of the world as her own personal property, even though most of it was given to the Vatican under King Henry VIII. But now, are these people evil, coming from the word devil without the D? Or are they just what they are? They just... The same way, I'm a good guy. I can't help it. I never met a stranger. I go to the gas station, there's some guy, you know, will work for beer or food, you know, and I'll walk up and give him $10. And I'll say, hey, you know, don't spend this on beer. You know, that's just me. I can't help it. That's the way I am. And I'm not boasting or bragging or nothing to that effect. But on the same token, on the other side of the coin, are the people that are starting all these aggressive wars all over the world and lying and the false flag attacks. Are they just are what they are? I mean, do you think they...
No, it's psychopathy. I mean, look, and we've done shows on this before. Thomas Sheridan came on several years ago, and we did extensive shows about psychopathy and why the human consciousness in some souls is seared. I mean, basically, that's what it is. You're dealing with a seared conscience that no longer has an objective means to navigate right and wrong. They simply are self-centered, egotistical, and acting in a manner which is anti-human.
Right. The prefrontal cortex is not functioning. I've had this question. Is this a spiritual thing? Because I've seen children that are born with psychopathy or sociopathy or malignant narcissism or, you know, pathological. And, you know, I always tell everybody, break the words down, learn the words, buy a dictionary, you know, psychopathy, psychopathy, pathologically sick, okay? Well, are they born that way? Or, it's so confusing.
Stephen, I've been given to know that there are different classes of entities that appear to be human on this planet. You and I both know this. Not everything that appears to be human is possessed of a human soul, the divinity of the spark, I guess what you would call the spark of creator. And whether they are extraterrestrials or whether they are daemons or children of archons, it's a little tough to distinguish, but if you live long enough, you're going to meet beings like this who just, they just aren't quite human.
And I bet, yeah.
They're soul dead. And unfortunately, those people tend to run very large corporations. They work, there's tons of them on Wall Street. In fact, there's studies that have proven that Wall Street's off scale in terms of the number of psychopaths that work there. And they seem to run our governments as well. And every once in a while, a good guy gets in. But for the most part, that's what's running this planet right now.
Yeah. And like, when you reincarnate, because, you know, to me, that makes sense. I mean, and I've studied Buddhism, too, where you hopefully get rid of all your karma so you don't have to come back here. But like we were kind of talking about earlier, kind of in a subtext, but... yeah, it's the same thing when a baby is born. Instead of a good soul like myself entering, you know, this child's body and starting all over again, an evil soul comes into the body of that child, like Charles Manson or whatever. And
It goes back to what we've been talking about on this show for a while now, about the infection that came into the planet as a result of the demiurge, the archons, whatever you want to call them. Humanity itself is infected with this, and it's something that we battle against within ourselves. I mean, even good people, we have our dark side, and anybody mm-hmm. that denies their dark side has denied their own humanness, because that's what we are. We are a very conflicted creation in that respect.
Yep. Well, I mean, look, I always tell people, be careful. I'm directly related with Yaldabaoth and Yahweh and Jehovah, and I'll love you 1 minute, and the next minute I want to tear your head off. So we all have that in us. I mean, not literally, I'm not that bad, but I'm just saying, we all have that schizophrenia, that split consciousness.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to fight it all the time, and if my heavy metal, people will listen to it from the 80s, 90s, I did heavy metal, a whole album just 2 years ago at my age, and it came out better than my 80s stuff. And people listen to that, and it either scares the hell out of them, like he's possessed, or they hear what I'm trying to do artistically, like hit.
Well, what's interesting, you know, I guess we go here. I grew up in the era of heavy metal when it first emerged. Where it began, I'm not sure, but I'll go back to Black Sabbath, and I will say that from Black Sabbath, you got to. Ronnie James Dio, you got Megadeth, Slayer, Metallica, and yet there's a certain artistry in that music that people don't understand. My son plays electric violin in a heavy metal context, and
cool. One
of the things that we've noted as we watched him progress is how much he uses his classical training within the framework of heavy metal rock music. Because it actually has all the forms there. So you can look at heavy metal and the satanic imagery that they present, and yeah, that's there as well. But I've actually heard, I don't know which is worse, actually, Christian rock music or heavy metal, but I've heard some...
Christian rock music.
Interesting presentations in a heavy metal context that are completely spiritual. I mean, just dead spot on.
Like Ozzy.
Exactly.
Generals gathered in the masses.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
that's almost biblical, you know.
And people go, well, where did that come from? Isn't he a devil worshiper? And you go, no, he's just a really screwed up person like the rest of us, and he's still trying to sort it out. I mean.
Right. Exactly. It's weird, dude, because I've been on the stage with Testament and Overkill. And some of the biggest, you know, heavy metal acts. I mean, this is recent, 2008. I opened with Testament and Overkill, and down in Ohio. actually in like a little Amish town, and all these Amish kids were showing up. It was really weird.
Yeah, the Amish kids will rock when you get them out for a weekend.
Yeah, Rammerspringer, you know. But I've witnessed both sides of heavy metal, where there's very benevolent heavy metal that's, you know, very hardcore, and then there's very malevolent heavy metal, which they're just in your face, like modern heavy metal, like Sons of Osiris and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just in your face, you know.
Satanism.
Not edifying.
Yeah.
Evil. I mean, it's just demonic. I mean,
yeah, I know.
I don't understand it. And they can't play their guitars. There's no guitar solos anymore. And they can't sing.
No, it's just this grinding guitar. I've gone out to clubs a few times when my son's played and seen some of this music. And I'm like, the guy only played one riff the whole way through the song. It's like, listen. Yeah. I've seen Richie Blackmore tear the roof off of the house.
Yeah. Yeah. And now they alternately tune the E string down to what, C, I think? So yeah. It's like, it's just this bass mud, you know, it's just, it's disgusting.
Well, it's emblematic of the age we're in, I guess.
Well, look what the kids were given, though, and this is what keeps me from being too judgmental. They're brought into a world where instinctually they know, as a living being, instinctually they know they got screwed over. They were given more vaccines than anybody and lied to about everything, and their only job is like McDonald's or Pizza Hut or Walmart or whatever.
I was in New York City in the late 70s when punk rock was in full bloom. I mean, I saw the Ramones and...
Oh, yeah.
Went to the Mud Club, and the nihilism that was expressed in that music was the rage of the world itself, the madness reflected around them. If you were on the streets of the East Village in New York City in 1978, the town was a wreck. New York was trashed at that point. It was economically depressed, and I mean, the culture itself was very much an expression of what was going on in the background. And so a lot of the rage that you get and a lot of the anger is actually a form of protest, a type of, I guess, response against the insanity of the world that these kids were born into.
Right. It's a reflection of the society they're in. Same with the modern metal, like Sons of Osiris, and I can't name them all, but... when you hear this really angry, demonic-sounding metal, that's just a reflection of the world they were born into. And it's very sad. And I know a lot of those young people. I've jammed with them and stuff, and they all want me to, you know, sing like one of their heroes. And it's like, dude, I'm not going to destroy my voice, you know, for you guys. No offense, but, oh, come on, man, it's cool. And, you know, that's all they really know. I go, you know, whatever happened to, like, Iron Maiden and, you know, and, you know, people that had, you know, like really intense, classically, neoclassical kind of overtones to it. And, you know, so.
Yeah, it's a dilution of the culture. I mean, and that's what we were talking about when we were really wrapping around that last hour. The dilution of the culture, the law is emblematic of the dilution of the culture, because now most people don't understand that they do have remedies at law. They don't understand that they're dealing with a system of fictions, corporate fictions. Everything's a corporation. The government's a corporation. Right. The laws are copywritten. The courts are banks who are basically constantly doing illegal conversion of assets, what the Book of Revelation calls trading in souls.
Right.
And it's all mercantilism. So how do we get grounded back into understanding who we are and our standing in law and not having our faces kicked in every time that we encounter law officers and government officials?
Well, that goes back to stay within the common law jurisdiction. I've heard a lot of misinformation on YouTube saying there's no such thing. It's like, yeah, there certainly is such a thing. It's called don't talk in court. Like I referred to earlier, because you are, okay, like, do you, I always ask people, do you understand Chinese? No. Well, then why do you want to go into a court and try to talk to a guy that's speaking Chinese? That's what you're doing.
Yeah, honestly, you wind up sounding like, and I've heard some of these guys, and I've read their papers, and it's like reading pig Latin. You just go, wait a minute, what are you trying to do? You're trying to sound like a pseudo-lawyer.
Exactly. And if you read a lot of the stuff they're doing, it's completely, it's so parenthetical that the judges are laughing at it. You know, because just the way they're, if you just look at the way they're filling out the paperwork, it's completely... you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's superfluous and parenthetical, and they're trying to copy stuff that they pulled off the internet, which never works. And they're using all the codes like they're an attorney admitted by the Supreme Court. You got to avoid all that stuff and not talk because you don't know legalese. I know a lot of legalese, but I still wouldn't try. With all my knowledge, I would not try it. But I don't lose, though. I don't end up in jail, you know, like a lot of these guys. They're just doing the stupidest things. Like, I'm driving around with no tag on their car and, you know, throwing their driver's license and their Social Security card in the garbage. It's like, well, you're part of society. You can use those instruments, but just separate yourself. You know, I had a judge ask me over a ticket. He goes, well, don't you enjoy society? I started laughing because he called me up to the bench. They had me as the last one on the docket. I said, are you kidding me? Do I enjoy society? What part? The aggressive wars, the chemtrails, the dumbed-down children that all they do is text each other, the dead Gulf of Mexico. What part are you talking about me enjoying? I didn't sign up for this, man. I said, I got a driver's license as a teenager, which is an adhesion contract with a minor. He goes, okay, you're winning. He goes, what do you want to do here? Then he handed me jurisdiction by asking me that question. I said, you reduce this to civil, and I'll pay you $40. He goes, okay, that sounds good. Can you pay today? I said, no. I was going to make it hard on him. I said, no, I need at least 2 months. He goes, come on, I'll give you 30 days. I said, 2 months or I got to go to a higher court. He goes, okay, I can give you 60 days. $40? He goes, well, how am I supposed to pay the police? I said, with all the taxes, the Highway Safety Act and the revenue, and do I have to write a paper on it for you? You know, it's not from tickets, you know. Come on, man. He goes, okay, $40 civil, and he slammed the gavel down and ran out of the courtroom. You know, I wasn't going to pay a $120 impeding ticket, and it was a criminal ticket. I said, why is this criminal? It says misdemeanor. Then you better pull up a jury. Well, I mean, you don't need a jury. I don't mind hearing the case. I said, it's not even a case. Where's the damaged party? I looked behind me. He goes, okay, well, you're winning already, and what are you trying to go here, you know? Now, remember, these are tickets, though. So I tell people, you know, you might want to practice your law on tickets and get good at it, like parking tickets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Lieber Code, my favorite section I use is Section 1, Article 11, which is the first page of the Lieber Code. The law of war does not only disclaim all cruelty and bad faith concerning engagements concluded with the enemy during the war, that's us, but also the breaking of stipulations solemnly contracted by the belligerents, us, in time of peace, and avowedly intended to remain in force in case of war between the contracting powers. So the contracting powers are the belligerents, that's us, and Washington, D.C., okay? So those contracts have to stay in power. It disclaims all extortions. Okay, now what are they doing when they pull you over? Under Title 42, Section 1981, under civil rights, they're exacting your property. These are exactions. They want prize. And it disclaims all extortions and other transactions for individual gain. Well, the attorneys are making money hand over fist. The judges are making money hand over fist on every felony conviction, and their money goes into the Chris account down there in Texas. All acts of private revenge or conveyance at such acts, offenses to the contrary, shall be severely punished, and especially so if committed by officers. Now, everything they just mentioned down there is a war crime. And this would go on your paper under CF, Charlie Frank, CF, colon, the Latin for compare to. Don't actually use the Lieber Code. I mean, use it, but put, I'm just comparing my beliefs to this code, you know. And that's a very powerful remedy. You could throw that on the third paper, you know, that I would offer the judge regarding his, you know, enforcing statutes and codes under the quasi-constitution of the organic D.C. Act of 1871, which subsequently abolished the 14th Amendment. And I have people say, what? What do you mean it abolished
the
14th?
I'd like you to explain a little bit about that, because I've not heard that said before.
Well, the 14th Amendment clearly talks about who is to fill government offices. And it doesn't mention associations or corporate entities. So the Act of 1871 vacated all the 14th Amendment offices. They don't exist. So if they don't exist, how can the 14th Amendment exist?
Well, technically, how can the 14th Amendment exist when there was no Congress? Because Congress was vacated prior to the Civil War when the Southern states walked out. Technically,
right.
you did not have a Congress at that point. You had what was called a rump assembly.
Exactly, and that's why it was never ratified. And people forget that point you just made. They always say, well, there was two states that didn't ratify it, so it's not legal anyway. It's like, well, there wasn't even a standing Congress at the time. Everything was
basically
chaos.
What you began, and this is... this is the historical legacy of Lincoln. It's quite horrible, because I think he was conflicted, and I think he was confused. I don't think he understood he didn't have the power to do what he did, and he played into a much larger game in terms of what he actually wound up doing with trying to so-called maintain the Union. There was no Union at that point. You couldn't maintain it anymore. The states themselves created the constitutionally constructed government that we call the United States of America. So when they walked away from it, basically they dissembled the original entity and had the right to do so.
Well, it was a harsh corporate takeover. And this goes right back to the prohibition of alcohol under Lincoln, because Lincoln was a whiskey baron. And a lot of people don't know this. He was a huge whiskey baron. So he was selling whiskey under the table. He wanted a harsh corporate takeover of the southern states that refused to follow his edicts, okay? So he said, he sent the troops south. He said, burn every farm to the ground, kill every man, woman, and child, animal. That's what happened. That's as harsh a corporate... I mean, he was as evil as any dictator of the 20th century. And people talk about him like he was this great guy. He was a psychopath.
Yeah.
He snorted cocaine during the day, and this is his own writings, cocoa powder, he called it, and he drank whiskey at night, he said, to kill the demons. This is a demonically possessed, archonic monster, is what President Lincoln was.
Yeah.
And guess who Barack Obama's hero is?
Of course.
President Lincoln.
We erected this. Look, you know, I mean, honestly, you know, America's two greatest vices, slaves and whiskey. I mean, you go back to 1791. What do you have? You have the whiskey rebellion under Washington. You go forward. You've got the same thing with Lincoln. And you've got the same problem back and forth again. Booze and slaves were the downfall of this country. And karmically, somehow, we're still reaping all of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the Muslim leaders of Africa sold their own people to the Europeans and the Spaniards and anybody else that wanted to buy these slaves, the Brits. And, of course, a lot of people don't know about the Irish and Scottish slaves that were brought to America.
No, I do, because that's my heritage. I'm of Irish descent.
Yeah, I'm Scottish and German. And which is like mixing a rattlesnake with a, which is like mixing a drunk rattlesnake with a rabid pit bull, my mom would tell you. But thank God I've got most of the good traits. I'm not a mean guy. I love animals and children, and I just love life. That's what pisses me off so bad, Randy. Excuse my French. I'm an idealist, okay? And I'd ideally like to see everybody be happy and healthy and educated and have their rights and their freedoms. And think of what this world could have been, even though this was created outside of the Father by the demiurge, the physical universe, if you will. Okay, even though that's the case, if we could have stayed together somehow and taken out these kings and queens where, you know, they taxed you based on how much sunlight came in your window, because you go, oh, why are the windows so small? And the old buildings in England, it's like, because it, that told you how much money people had. If they had little tiny windows or no windows at all, they couldn't afford to pay the tax for the sunshine.
Yeah, and honestly, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. It's unbelievable. No,
it's worse. It's worse. Yeah, now we can't collect rainwater or we go to jail.
I look around right now, and we had this bright, shining moment of the Republic, whatever it was. We had this, like, wedge in civilization where we could have gone over the top, and yet somehow it got corrupted, it got infiltrated. The problem is, and the reason why you and I are having this conversation tonight, Stephen, is because these guys wrote things down, and they want us to forget what was written in the Organic Constitution. They want you to not know about the Liber Code, and they've done a damn fine job. Most people have no idea what the Liber Code is. I wasn't taught.
Nope.
I wasn't taught the Liber Code. I wasn't taught the truth about Reconstruction at all in my ninth grade civics class, where they spent an entire semester teaching the Civil War and taught it all wrong. I mean,
right.
So now the remedy is you and I, people like us, we get on this internet and we shout out the truth about what's really going on, because you know what? Darkness and light coexist, but darkness doesn't comprehend light. So we got to keep shoving the light through those tiny little windows that they taxed our asses for, so that we right. can shine some light into an otherwise dark world.
And you know who was behind the Reconstruction Act of 1867? The KKK. And that was the first gun law legislation. Negroes, this is their own terminology, I'm not a racist, okay? I sang in Detroit at the biggest black churches probably in the world, mm-hmm. okay? But the first gun legislation came out of the Reconstruction Act, and it said, well, Negroes could have a shotgun, but they couldn't have a revolver or like a 30-30 Winchester. Okay, that was the first gun legislation act under the, oh, Lord. Now I won't be able to remember it. I'm sorry. But so I think we're on the same wavelength of just one piece of legislative fraud after another for the past over 200 years, you know, and it's disgusting. But you know what, though? When it all collapses, you know, I might not be here. I'm a realist. Some psycho will probably shoot me or whatever, but and my dog. But I pray, you know, and I say that tongue in cheek, you know, I'm not a big bear guy because the Father isn't here in the physical very much that I've seen, but I don't blame him. I wouldn't be either. But I pray there's enough good guys left, because I think all these reptilian, archonic beings that just see us as like cannon fodder, and they always have. They'll disappear underground and hopefully be killed off. But, man, if we all could have come together and overlooked, you know, the Republican and Democrat, liberal and conservative and whatever, and Christian and Muslim, and, you know, if we could have got by all that stuff. And that, see, this is how cities were created. A lot of people don't understand. Cities were created for protection against these alien entities hundreds of thousands of years ago.
They were citadels, okay, basically. They were fortresses.
Exactly correct. And, these alien Elohim, they're back. I mean, there's just look on YouTube. There's videos all over the world, some of the craziest stuff you've ever seen, you know, and people that don't even know each other videotaping, you know, similar things. They're back. And if we could have all come together and planned against these guys, we could have defeated them by not participating in their, because, you know, well, go ahead, destroy a bunch of the citadels or cities. Who cares? The human race, like cockroaches, has crawled out of the ashes
exactly.
and the dirt, right along with Cher. That's all that's going to survive the nuclear apocalypse, cockroaches and Cher, you know. How about you, babe? How about you? That's terrible. So we will crawl out of the ashes and maybe a nuclear winter for a couple hundred years, but the Earth will heal itself. I mean, I'm not a total pessimist like Dr. Joseph Chapelong.
Chapelong, yeah.
Man, I don't know.
I'm not either. And I have problems with that. Here's why. I understand where we're at in time. And first off, I don't trust aliens to rescue humans. Humans have to rescue themselves. It does not require the majority of anything to change the world, because the world has never been changed by majority. The world has been changed on the pivot of 3 to 5% of any given group. And I'm talking small groups. I'm saying that the consciousness on this planet right now is changing. It's getting worse and it's getting better. And I've done shows on this. It is the sharp contrast between darkness and light. And like I said, you can get rid of a hell of a lot of darkness by lighting one candle. Light three and you can read by it.
Wow.
We keep pushing and pushing the envelope in everything that we do. We are the expansion of consciousness. It is a field effect. But the majority of people don't need to get it. The majority of people on the continent during the Revolutionary War, so-called, were not in favor of waging war against England. The men who laid their lives, their fortunes, their properties on the line to fight that war were less than 7% of the total population at the time. And so I say that because our hope doesn't lie in numbers. Our hope lies in us being a consistent, constant push to get information out and to wake up the people that need to be woken up right now.
Right. Right. Amen. And I'll tell you what, think about it like this too. Not all of the military has swayed over to Clinton and Bush and Bush and Obama. I would say there's at least 30% of the military that will turn on our side.
I'm told it is over 50% right now, and it's getting higher.
I hope so.
Mainly because most of these young men went in with, they're idealists. Look, when you're 18, 19 years old, and you're white bread America, you do have certain ideals. And I think deep inside, a lot of the people inside the military have a conviction that goes to the core values of the country. They're wrong about the wars they're fighting, and they're wrong about the government they're fighting for, but they're not wrong about the principles. And somewhere along the line, when they see that they're basically turned over onto battlefields and left to dangle in the face of brutal enemies, they come back to this country and they have to go for care to a VA system that's hopelessly broken. They're dumped into a culture which is now completely socialized and run by psychopaths. At some point, you wake up and you go, what the F are we going to do about this?
Exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, it's sad because these are young folks. And they did what they thought was honorable and good-hearted to serve the country. And we do live in a dangerous world.
You're a veteran. My father was a veteran of Korea. My father told me point blank, several years before he lapsed into the dementia that ultimately took his life, that he knew that Korea was a joke. He was stationed in the Sea of Japan. And they would go on shore and they would see he called them the blue helmets, the UN guys. And all they were doing was basically sitting around conference tables in Seoul doing nothing while they were being shelled out in the Sea of Japan. I mean, he had a ship blown out from underneath him.
Oh, my Lord.
Most military people, and I know guys from the Vietnam era, and quite frankly, they came back. They were the greatest rebels you ever saw. And they had to heal themselves. A lot of them, had to use drugs just to live with what they did. And you've got people with post-traumatic stress disorder, MPD, and the massive neurological damage that comes from being in a war zone. There is a point when all of this has to end. And I don't think the nuclear option is on the table. I don't think that's going to be allowed.
No, I hope not.
I hope that America has within its ranks of leaders the good men who are ultimately going to stand up and take control back of this government. And maybe that's just me being Pollyannish, but I have to believe
that. No, you're right. They took the nuclear football and the submarine keys away from Barack Obama like a year ago.
No, it's very clear that they can't do that option. And we have this strange situation right now where all of a sudden a Russian prime minister looks like the best leader on the planet. And you're going, what? Are you kidding me? Really? But you see, this is the ping pong ball going back and forth again. The economic system has everything in the universe tends towards equilibrium. So I believe that if you look at what's going on with Russia, if you look at BRICS right now and China, you realize that the trend towards equilibrium, something like this is required.
Right, to balance everything out. They've pushed everything they can do, and they've hit this huge wall of resistance. And once that ball hits that concrete wall, it has to go back the other direction. And they realize if we destroy the world's economies, we've destroyed ourselves, because they won't survive it. They know that.
No, ultimately the failure is going to come, and it will be because they drove the bus over the cliff.
Right.
For them, that will be a disaster. I think one of the things that people have to do now, and again, this goes back to everything that we're talking about tonight, equipping people to deal with issues at law, equipping them to understand proper economics, which has nothing to do with the fiat currencies, everything to do with the production and trade of values between human beings, and the fact that the greatest wealth that we have is what we give to our fellow man. When we stop denominating everything with a dollar bill, we will have the beginnings of a genuine currency again.
Right. Yeah. Like, I can grow food. I'm Mennonite. My grandfather was Mennonite, but I took after him. So I can grow food. I'm trying to get away from meat altogether, but it's very hard. And so I can provide great services to people. I'm an expert with horses. I can do almost anything with horses and buggies. Animals and things. They go back to that. And to make a long story short, because I know we're low on time now, but we don't need a money system. We need each other, you know.
We do.
We need each other.
Yeah. Yeah, even gold ultimately fails. Even the Old Testament Bible says that at one point gold just, they call it cankered, which means it's rusted, corroded. Well, gosh, where does that happen?
I can't eat gold.
No, that's right. You can't. And there's a balance in everything. I mean, I'm in favor of the use of precious metals as a currency because it's something that's recognizable and denominable, but at the same time, it's not an end unto itself. Stephen, we're bumping up on like the last 4 minutes here, and I want people to get a nutshell of what you're about. Do you have a website? I know you have a YouTube channel. Give that out. But any other contact information? Oh, gosh, you just dropped off. Okay, let me go to music here for a minute and see if I can bring him back on. You dropped off.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
The website's easy. It's Showcase Your Music. This is the way it sounds. Showcase Your Music, all one word, .com/ Prelude to Infinity. Prelude and the number 2, Infinity. And there's like 670,000 hits on that website. I'm always changing songs. There's solos and operas and everything on there. So, and the most important thing to me as of right now in my life is doing what we're doing tonight. But I still enjoy my music, you know.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate your time and your hard work, Randy.
Give out your YouTube channel as well. That'll be a good point of contact for people.
What's that now? YouTube?
Your YouTube channel.
Oh, just it's a username is just Steven, JUST space Steven, STEPHEN, just Steven. That's the channel name.
Steven, this will not be the last time we speak with this audience. Thank you for coming on. Stay on the line. I'll talk to you once we clear the show. This is All okay. Planet Radio. I'm Randy Moggins. The truth is out there. It's inside you. Keep looking for it. We'll be back next week live for another show at tlbtowncrier.com. Good night.